This episode brought to you by Beta Brand, the San Francisco-based source for crowdfunded clothing you can visit in person the next time you're in San Francisco, or stop by anytime online to shop bestsellers like dress pant yoga pants and now yoga jeans. And when you do, use the code SPIRIT20 to save 20% off anything on the site. But that's not the only reason we love Beta Brand. Oh no, our fandom does not stop at stretchy pants we can wear all day, no matter where we are. There are a great many other things you can do on the site, which is BETABRAND.com. Among them, you can use their Model Citizen tool to upload your own photo and then receive a custom link that makes it look like you are the main model on the homepage of their website. It's kind of a fun thing to share with family and friends on social media, leaving them to wonder whether they should congratulate you on your new and unexpected side gig or actually call your bluff. For you designers out there, you can submit your own ideas for new products and actually earn money when they become full-fledged Beta Brand products. And anyone, anytime, can visit the site to vote for the new designs that will become the next product sold on betabrand.com. And there's this: when you vote and a product ends up crowdfunded into production, you get a discount. And speaking of discounts, you can always save 20% when you shop the site with the code SPIRIT20. As regular listeners to the show know, we at Spirit of 608 appreciate Beta Brand's support, their support of female entrepreneurs and women building businesses in Fest. We're big fans of the company, what they do, and we think you will be too. So check them out at betabrand.com. This and every episode also brought to you with support from Prestope by the Spirit of 608. It's the new, affordable, interactive, and community-driven alternative to traditional PR and media relations built with care by us, especially for Fest brands. Visit the site to find out more about how we're able to bring our members one-on-one help and feedback from media experts, including direct answers to your questions, recommended daily media outreach tasks curated by us, especially with your business in mind, a DIY PR resource library, exclusive media ops, and connections with other Fest founders, plus much more, all for a monthly cost that's less than what a single hour of professional PR or media consulting would cost your brand. So check it out at prestope.com. That's PRESSDOPE.com. Spirit of 608, episode 96. You're listening to the Spirit of 608 podcast. I'm your host, Lorraine Sanders. Keep listening for stories, tips, and advice from women at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. I call it Fest, and it's the future. Welcome to today's show. I'm so glad that you have opened up the podcast today and are joining me for a conversation with women at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. As you know, I call it Fest and believe it's the future of a better fashion industry. And I'm thrilled to be able to bring you today's guests. I'm going to introduce them in just a second. Before I do that, I got to tell you, I just got back last night from being at the Shop Talk conference in Las Vegas for this whole week. And, you know, I think probably what I should be coming to the show and saying is that I'm so energized that I couldn't wait to get on the microphone and like talk and share all this stuff with you today. And that I'm a ball of energy and all of that. But actually, that's totally not the case at all. I got up this morning and I was thinking, oh my Lord. I don't know if you, like, probably all of you feel this, you know, regularly, but just totally depleted from traveling. And this week was so amazing in so many ways. I got to meet just tons of people that were fabulous. And I like the fact that I can bring so many of them onto the show later this year is for you guys to listen to is wonderful. And I'm really excited about it. And I also was able to reconnect with a lot of people that I hadn't seen for a long time from, you know, other places around the country and the world. And so it was a wonderful experience. But I just, you know, when you go to things that involve 5,000 people getting together and talking about stuff that you're really into, I mean, it's just a big ball of emotions and highs and lows. And there are positive moments that make you feel great. And there's negative moments that make you feel like crap. And there's moments where you're confused about what the heck it is that you're doing. And then there are moments you're super hyper focused. And I mean, it was just a huge confluence of all of that stuff. Suffice to say, I got up this morning and I was like, I don't know if I can get on the microphone today and record and be the person that I need to be to put this show together for you so that it's something that's valuable and you feel like you have gotten something out of the conversation. I feel like I need to bring a certain amount of energy to things to make that happen for listeners, right? And I was kind of fretting about that and like woe is me-ing and like grumping around. And then I started to focus on what the show really is all about. So take my insecurity and my fatigue and, you know, this bundle of, you know, stuff that's going on in my head that I haven't quite sorted through from the week that I've just had. I was able to put it aside for a second and really zero in on what my job is. And that is to bring you great content and help elevate women who are building really wonderful businesses that can not only push things into a different place in the fashion and apparel industry, but also can bring more economic power and freedom and frankly change in how business is done to a lot of women's lives. So I say all of this, you know, and I promised you guys at the beginning of the year I was going to stop all of the long introductory stuff that I was in the habit of doing last year and move it all to the end of the show after the interviews. But I'm doing it today because I wanted to just let you know where my head was at and also just to say thank you, because if it were not for the show, I would not be able to so quickly refocus my attention and get back on track with what I need to do and keep moving forward. And, you know, I think this whole idea of you create in life what you need the most, I'm not getting the quote exactly right, but I keep coming back to that because I think it's really true for me. I mean, I put this stuff out there, you know, because I really believe in the ideas behind the show, but it's also kind of funny how it comes back to me in a lot of ways. So thank you for listening and for being the reason that I'm able to refocus today, which is something I definitely need to be doing. And I hope we can all turn our focus now to the awesome guests that are coming on the show today. It's actually our first mother-daughter team to come on at the same time. We've had other guests who work with their moms in their business, Dear Miss J being one of them. She was on last year, the founder of that company. A great jewelry brand. But this is actually the first interview that I've done where both mother and daughter are on the show at the same time. And I know you're going to get a lot out of hearing from them. They are Kathy Mosa and Emily Whitaker, the co-founders of Beija Floor Jeans. Now, this is a South Carolina-based company that just really blows me away with its story, how it has grown, and its origins. You'll hear Kathy and Emily talk about how they started the brand after becoming frustrated with the denim options that they had out there and noticing a completely different approach in the way women and apparel manufacturers were handling denim in Brazil. So this is a brand that is really built on the idea of empowering women through clothes that fit and are realistic in how they fit. And then there's also an eco-friendly component and a high-tech component. I mean, there's a lot of really awesome festive stuff here that I got and I continue to get super excited about. You'll hear us talk more about that during the conversation. And I think also for those of you who listen and are in the midst of building your own brand and you're fairly early on, it'll be really interesting to hear Kathy and Emily talk about their experience and their journey, because they've been at this for quite a number of years and they have tried many different ways of selling. And I just love how nimble and innovative they have been with how they get their product to customers. They've done everything from in-home parties to now they'll send you a box where you can try things on and send it back. But they're also in Bloomingdale's locations, and they have a healthy, robust wholesale part of their business as well, and they're in specialty boutiques around the country and have more recently begun to open up their own stores. So it's a really interesting company to pay attention to for so many reasons, and I'm thrilled to be able to bring the conversation with them to you today. Before we get to that, as always, a quick shout out to our fabulous show sponsor, Beta Brand. Now, as you know, if you listen to the show, you can always use the code SPIRIT20 to shop the site, BETABRAND.com, and you'll save 20% off when you do. But funny story about Beta Brand, it's not really about buying their clothes. This thing I wanted to tell you about them today, it's not really about, hey, go look at this item and check it out, which is what I usually do in my mentions of them each week. But I recently learned out something interesting that I thought you might find to be kind of cool. And that's that a lot of bigger brands are now apparently using Beta Brand to test out products with new audiences. And, you know, I often think of Beta Brand as the place to go for cool clothes that have this interesting, you know, twist to them that I appreciate. But I also like to get behind brands that I feel like are about a lot more than just the products that they sell. And in Beta Brand's case, it's pretty cool because there are much bigger brands like Timberland, Vivo Barefoot Shoes, and then also even the North Face that are looking at Beta Brand's platform and being able to use it to kind of test products and figure out more about their audiences and more about what people want. And the reason that I get excited about that is because I think it's an example of how smaller startups, and Beta Brand's not tiny by any means, but it, you know, it's not like the North Face. It's really interesting to see collaborations between sort of old guard household name companies and newer innovative startups. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that in the future. I saw many examples of that happening coming out of Shop Talk this past week, actually, of startups and new independent brands collaborating with bigger, much bigger global companies and doing it for mutual benefit. So I think it's a sign of the times. I think that it's something you're going to want to pay attention to if you're building your own brand today. Another thing to pay attention to is betabrand.com and the code SPIRIT20. It's there for you when you need it. Another thing that's there for you when you need it is Presto by the Spirit of 608. As you know, it's our new service that we debuted for Fest Founders earlier this year. And coming up after the conversation with Kathy and Emily today, we've got our first Presto founding member interview. I hope you will stick around for that because you'll be able to hear from Aaron at Wearwell, which is a really cool company that is actually launching its crowdfunding campaign this week. And I am like so freaking over the moon about what this company is up to. And I think you're going to be really excited about it too if you're somebody that wants to shop from sustainable and ethical fashion lines but has found the process of doing it to be really too time consuming and frustrating for you. They really have a cool solution to that. And it all starts this week. And I hope you will stick around to hear Aaron tell us more about it. That's coming up after the conversation with Kathy and Emily of Beja Floor Jeans. Kathy, Emily, welcome to the Spirit of 608 podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're quite proud and excited to be here with you.
Yeah, well, I'm so excited to have you both on. I'm trying to think back over the guests that we've had. I don't think we've ever had a mother-daughter team that has been on the show at the same time. I know we've had companies where both mom and daughter were involved, but it's really cool to have a mother-daughter team on the show for what I think is the first time.
Well,
there's probably a reason you don't get a lot of mother-daughters. So.
I'm not sure if it's going to be the best idea, but for the most part, we get along magnificently.
Well, I would be shocked if, I mean, you know, any business, if you're like, oh, it's all unicorns and rainbows and,
Oh, yeah, no.
Well, this is, I can tell already it's going to be interesting to hear more. But before we get into your story, can you start us out by telling us a little bit more about what Beja Floor does and why it's different from other denim brands that we may have heard of that are out there today?
I think the thing that makes us, this is Emily, I think the thing that makes us most unique was our really specific focus in the beginning. We weren't setting out to start a fashion company. We really set out to solve a problem that we were both having as women, and that was finding premium, high-quality denim that fit our curves, essentially, and fit our specific body types, which were different from each other's, but also different from a lot of what the designers were designing for.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that we're a very authentic brand, that we grew out of that necessity. And I think that that's what kind of sets us apart. And we're very committed to how we produce, where we produce, and the way we treat each other.
Yeah. On our search to solve that kind of problem of fit, we went to Brazil. And that was where our story really began, because I'm half Brazilian. My mom's husband is Brazilian. And we realized that they were solving some of these problems that we had found and that were being ignored by the American designers. And so what we loved about it was not only that they were their fit, but they were doing it in a socially conscious way, an environmentally friendly way, which we thought was unique to fashion in general at that time.
I love that you had the focus from early on and were trying to solve a problem and not just start a fashion brand, sort of in quotes, because I feel like so many companies that really, you know, click with people and their audiences, I mean, that's what they're trying to do. They have this really specific thing. But what I'm really curious about and wanted to ask you about is, you know, so many people would go to Brazil and notice this, you know, awesome pair of jeans that they found and kind of complain among their friends about how it was so hard to find great fitting jeans. And then they would, you know, come back to the US and go on about their lives. What do you think it is about you both that led you to turn around and build a company around this thing that you noticed that jumped out to you? Do you have sort of entrepreneurial spirit in your family? Is there a fashion background in your family as well? I'd love to know kind of what put you guys in that mindset that would have made you go forward with building a brand as opposed to just sort of noticing the problem and moving on.
Well, I definitely think there's a background in both of our lives in the fashion industry. I was I was in college as an accountant, but ended up going into business with my mother and my sister in a small boutique. So, you know, got immersed in the whole fashion industry and worked in that as a small retailer for 21 years. And then left that business and went into the wholesale side of the business just because I was interested in it to see as a sales representative, and got a perspective from that. And then I think my daughter and I, Emily and I both had decided, you know, at some point that after she got out of college and she was working in D.C., that we'd like to work together and do something together that involved Brazil. You know, we have a very strong connection to our Brazilian family and the Brazilian way of seeing, of doing business and seeing life. And so I think that when we made this effort, said, look, we started doing our due diligence. What is it that we can find in Brazil? And what we realized is that the Brazilians themselves are very innovative and they're very creative, and also the women are very feminine, and they, you know, and this is kind of an old term now, embrace your curves, but they truly do embrace their curves and they are very proud.
But I think, you know, as far as the entrepreneurial spirit, you know, I grew up in a business. And when you look back at our history, there was a lot of family businesses. So I think that for me, it was hard to go into the corporate life, you know, having started kind of working in the family clothing store since I can remember. I mean, even probably before it was legal to work in it, then to go into the corporate world and see, for me, what was frustrating in the corporate world was how slow things were to move. And if our team had an idea, or if we wanted to make a change in the creative, it could take, you know, months, if not years, to get things passed. So for me, you know, mom, I think, brought that true passion and experience in the fashion, whereas I just wanted to experience that starting something, creating it, and then moving at a really fast pace.
So what drew you to wanting to work with a family member in this? Because, you know, I can also imagine, just like I was sort of imagining that a lot of people would see this and kind of move on and never do anything about it, that, you know, you could be frustrated with the corporate world and know that you wanted to go out on your own, but then try to go find a partner that you had worked with in your corporate situation, you know, you said before that you and your mom had kind of talked about how to build something together that had to do with Brazil. What do you think made it happen that you turned to each other to build this business as opposed to going to other people outside the family?
You know, I think a lot of what makes you is your genes. And so you never know. If I just had this kind of hereditary instinct to want to run a business, I think a lot of, if I look back at my childhood and our whole family, we couldn't go anywhere, whether it be a restaurant or a store, without having some sort of critique of that. And all of our dinner conversations were always about business, what was happening with technology. You know, we were one of the first families I knew in the neighborhood to have a computer, a personal computer, because of because of my mom's business and her bringing home a computer. So I think that it was almost like we've always been working toward this, you know, and the similar to how someone is raised in a, you know, a family business, and there's this expectation that you're going to go into the family business. Ours was that there was not necessarily an expectation that I was going to go into the existing business, but there was an an invitation that we could work together. Any of my siblings, I think, felt that way.
Yeah, I think that collaboration is the key, that something that is very important in our family. We've always collaborated, whether it was a science project or whatever, and the whole family got involved in that. So I think we both felt very comfortable in collaborating. And I think that's what really drives a business, is a sense of collaboration. And Emily, of course, studied communications in college. And so she is the grand communicator, we call her in our family. And so I think that,
called other things.
And
too.
Being the middle child, we also refer to her as the glue that keeps us all together, among other things. But so I think that it's just that sense of collaboration that.
Yeah, I think when you think about starting something with a team, you always look to people that you trust and you feel like you know. I think that one of the biggest challenges in starting a business is getting involved in a business with someone. And I think that's what holds a lot of people back, is you hear horror stories about partnerships breaking up, you know, expectations not being met. And so when you go into it with family, it can be riskier because the family relationship could be at risk. But it's also, you can feel more confident knowing, hey, I know this person. This is, you know, my mom, this is my daughter. So that took away some of that initial anxiety.
Well, I love that you're talking about this because, and as listeners know, I have two young kids. And so I'm always thinking about how the family structure and how what the kids experience growing up leads to how they approach, you know, entrepreneurial stuff in the future. And so, I don't know, I'm glad that you shared that because I love hearing that things like that help. Like growing up in a family with business, you know, where it's a topic of conversation and where it's something both parents are into, actually often trickles down and gets the kids excited about it too. That's really cool to hear. So I also wanted to go back to the early days of Beige de Fleur and ask you what we would not recognize today about the first year. So, you know, I've read that you were driving around in a van doing house parties. Can you tell me a little bit about how the day-to-day has changed since you first launched?
We each have 7 jobs now versus we had probably 20. No.
You still wear a lot of hats.
Yeah. It hasn't changed. I mean, there's the big things, right? Like, we were actually working out of my mom's dining room. Now we have a corporate office with 12 people yeah. And in our office.
Things get done without us even knowing it.
Right. We can go on sales trips or meetings and know that the operation goes on and functions. And whereas in the beginning, those first couple of years, we were the operation. So if we weren't selling it or shipping it or having it made, it didn't happen. So that would be the biggest difference. But I think and then the product, we look back at the product, and it's interesting because obviously your collections are going to change because that's the nature of fashion. But the kind of core principles are still there with our original jeans. And sometimes we joke that we made them too high quality because people will call us and say, I bought this jean. It's called the Denise. You know, it was like maybe 8 or 16 seasons ago, and they want another one. And we have kind of moved on. So some of it hasn't changed that much. But I think one thing in the purse, going back to the family, we're not together nearly as much. We've kind of had to divide and conquer. So, which has been good because we have our strengths and weaknesses. But in the beginning, we were literally in a van together a lot.
And I think that one of the things that's important that has kept us going is this sense of survival. And recently I was interviewed by a lady who'd written a book, Survive to Thrive. And it triggered in me this idea that it really is about survival. And you do what, and I think that's what Emily and I have in common. We will do whatever it takes to get the job done. And I think that
in the beginning, it is survival, but you have to balance that with growth.
Yeah.
And so, you end up having, I told someone recently who's starting a business, it's almost important to have, before you write your own business plan, to have your own personal plan. So, because sometimes you end up putting all of your energy and effort into the benchmarks you've created for the business, and you somewhat ignore the personal benchmarks you have. So it's almost like you get into some sort of river, and then you can't really get out of the river and look and see what's happening. You're already in it. So that beginning period of setting things up, and at least as a framework, obviously things will change. But I think, you know, you do thrive. I like the name of that book, Thrive to Survive, but or what is it?
Survive to Thrive.
Yeah. But you balancing survival and thriving is probably the hardest thing.
Yeah, I would say, because you can get too hyper-focused on things. But the business world is constantly changing. Fashion's constantly changing. You know, you can't set these rules, you know, that you're going to do something for the next 5 years. You don't know what's going to happen in the next 5 years.
Just looking at the channels, we didn't have, when we first started, we didn't sell e-commerce, for example. That wasn't part of our plan. Now it's a significant part of our plan and probably will end up being the largest part of our revenue. So that disruption is something everybody has been experiencing.
Well, that's something that stood out to me when I was looking into, you know, what Beige Fleur has done and thinking about interviewing you, is that it was notable to me that you have this very robust wholesale business from what it looks like, but you also have your own stores and you have an e-commerce business. And a lot of brands that are independent, and they don't, it doesn't strike me that they're as quick to experiment in all different areas. Do you feel like from your side that you're fairly quick to try new things, or did all of these pieces of how you reach your audience come about at different times so that they didn't feel like they were happening all at once? I mean, I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about how you got into the channels that you've chosen and what that was like from, you know, your perspective as people growing the business. Were they hard decisions to make, or did it just seem like a natural thing that you knew you had to do?
The way I think about it is kind of what drove our decisions. In the beginning, what drove our decisions was our own personal experience. So it drove our design. It drove our entry into the wholesale market, because that's where my mom, that's where her contacts were. That's where her experience was. So it was, for us, it would have been more risky if we hadn't had those contacts with, for example, in the Atlanta wholesale apparel or the New York trade shows. So, but then as we grew, we tried to listen more to our customers' experiences, and that's what drove us to and, right, to do retail. So, you know, we actually have women in our town here in Greenville that would come by our office and try to buy jeans directly from us, you know, out of our very kind of corporate office. And so that was when we first said, hey, maybe we need a store if people are going to come here and try to. Yeah, it wasn't a plan. In fact, I think it was my mom's never plan, because she had worked in retail so long. She said, I don't want to be in retail, you know? So that's when we started saying, okay, well, what's the customer? And the same thing happened with the online. We were essentially running an online phone business, in a sense. People would call, we'd ship them. And then that morphed into this kind of try at home program, where we gained these trusts for these certain customers. So we'd ship them each season a box of jeans. So it really came from her customers, the channels and how we grew them. And then, you know, obviously seeing what works, you put more energy and effort into what works and try to make sure that it all balances out.
Well, I think it's really interesting that you're basically saying you're customer driven, and so many, you know, tech companies and startups these days sort of advise younger entrepreneurs to go with the customer driven model, and you're watching what they want and then you kind of deliver it to them. It sounds like that's what you were doing. And I'm just cracking up thinking about people coming into your corporate office and probably trying to try things on in the bathroom or like a conference room or something like that. I bet that was a funny experience.
And actually it was the consumer, our end consumer, that saved us, because we did have this assumption, oh, mom has all of these connections in the Atlanta Apparel Mart. She's been there. She knows all this. And I thought the same thing, you know, that this is going to be build it and they will come. We set up our first booth and no one bought anything. So it was a disaster. And we had all this inventory. So out of that experience, we realized, well, we got to go back in there and study this. What are we going to do? Well, let's take the jeans to the consumer. And we came up with the jeans party idea. And we got on the road with the minivan, like you said, and we just went up and down the whole East Coast, wherever we had a family member or a friend that would take us in and have a party. And that's where we really fine-tuned the fit and what consumers were, you know, what the women were wanting out of a pair of jeans.
Well, that's fascinating. When you were in that moment, when you went to the trade show and nobody bought anything, what do you think it was that kept you going with the business? Because I feel like it might have been, you know, some people would have been in that situation and just walked away from it and said, okay, well, we don't have it right here and we're not going to continue. What made you know that you had to push on? It was just a matter of finding that different way of selling, and then it wasn't the idea and the product itself that were, you know, fundamentally flawed.
We had a real strong belief in the product, and we just don't know how to walk away from anything. That's unfortunately, that's maybe we should have. But at the point, we decided, no, we know we have a good product. And we also had bought product. We had inventory.
That was probably the biggest
thing. We had to sell it. You know, we basically had to go just like the old merchants, you know, thousands ago.
Well, I think number one, we were wearing the product at that point.
Yeah.
So it's like using a piece of software, a new app, and you're like, this is helping my life. This is good.
Yeah.
And then I think we've always realized our biggest challenge besides money, because I think that's everyone's biggest challenge, is exposure. And the fashion world, so many brands can literally be created and launched with the right amount of money, but the right amount of connections rapidly. But if you don't have those connections and you don't have a large amount of money, it might be one of the most challenging areas, I think, of business.
For sure.
And do you think that's changing at all? Because I know a lot of people listening to the show who are like the regular listeners, that's what they're in the midst of trying to do, start either independent fashion brand, or they're starting a company that's, you know, digitally based, but reaches a fashion audience. And I have a sense that it's getting easier to throw up a business these days just because of new things like Shopify, and you know, there's just so much lower overhead with a lot of the things that you used to have to do even like 5 years ago. Do you have a sense that it's getting easier, or do you think it'll always be one of the most challenging areas to get into?
I think certain things are definitely getting easier. We use Shopify. Shopify was a huge part of our growth. It is extremely user-friendly and kind of open. It took account in our stage. It's grown with us in that sense, but it's still very, it's not like the internet is just filled with little online brands. We're now competing with, everybody's going direct now. So there was a small window of time where we could run ads on Facebook and really make a difference for a low amount of money. And now it's digital advertising can be just as cost prohibitive as, you know, advertising in a glossy magazine. So I don't think it's easier. I think it is easy to start things and throw up a website and put product on it, but that's not going to necessarily to keep the business, to keep eyes on your site, to drive traffic to it, and to do transactions and to build customer relationships. I think it's easier. And I think a lot of that is too, there are so many people in the game now that it's hard to not only get in front of someone, but then to stay in front of them. So, and I think it can be dangerous for someone to think that anything is easier mm-hmm. and glamorous. You know, we always joke that song, there's like song Glamorous, and we sing it to ourselves when we're, you know, carrying a load of boxes to a show. I mean, I think a lot, what we see in a lot of our younger team members who join us, who have an impression of what it's like to work in a fashion company, quickly realize it's not glamorous. It can be fun and exciting and really rewarding, but there's very few glamorous moments or easy moments.
Well, speaking of things that are...
I'm discouraged. All your listeners are like closing up their Shopify accounts now. No, I'm
just... Still take hard work.
I think it's important that you're saying that, because so many people do glamorize, especially right now, entrepreneurship in general is having a bit of a moment. And I think people do glamorize it. And also what it is to be in the fashion industry, whether you're running a brand or whether you are in it in some other capacity. So I'm just glad that listeners can hear from people that are doing it, who are growing something and who have been in it for many years, are able to say, look, like, this isn't just a cakewalk. And you can't go into it thinking that, because if you do, you're going to be really surprised and you may not get where you trying to go. But you know, you're speaking of things that are not easy. I'm wondering if there is a moment that you can talk about that was a really big challenge for you in the business, and tell us a little bit about how you handled it.
I think before we diversified our channels and went into direct to consumer, every negative interaction we had with a retailer hurt. And it was, you know, what happens is a lot of your forecasts are based on a couple really good accounts doing a lot of business with you. And so if one of those accounts just decides, hey, we want to try something new, or these are too expensive, you know, you never know what the negative is going to be. That's always a scary moment, because you've put a lot of your stock into that work, that relationship working out. And that's kind of the hardest thing when you are so heavily dependent on retailers. It ultimately, one buyer or even assistant buyer can have a very large positive or negative effect on your business. And then the other thing we call, it's referred to in the industry as box fever, is when you get a box of boxes, many multiple box pallets of a product that isn't exactly what you intended it to be. And then you have to, and my mom is very good about, we call it pivot, you know, the pivot. Okay, well, we're going to love this. Whatever's in this box, we're going to love it. And it's going to be, we're going to figure out a way to introduce it to our customers so that they'll love it.
Yeah, I think that there, you know, sometimes you have to kind of redirect your focus from what you thought the consumer was going to want to what they actually want. Once would be the bootcut jean that, you know, we thought that was going to be just, you know, sometimes if you read some of these fashion blogs who are the people who are predicting what's going to be great. And sometimes these people really are just basing it on, I don't know what they're basing it on, just because they want to change. Because a lot of times the fashion world just depends on having that change. Otherwise, we'd all be wearing the same clothes every single season. So, you know, the prediction was, oh, boot cuts are going to just be, everyone's going to. So, of course, we produced a lot of boot cuts. And now we're realizing that we can sell the boot cuts, but we have to hem them to make them petite boot cuts. Because once again, it's all about the shoes. Because, you know, people used to wear a much higher heel with a boot cut. Now they're wearing lower heels. So it's all about adjusting.
Yeah. And I think separating what we're seeing from what's being told and, you know, the athleisure thing, for example, you know, we had people coming up to us at shows be like, oh God, what are you guys going to do? How are you going to survive this? No one's going to wear jeans again. It's all yoga pants. And, you know, we actually, that year that came out, we grew. And I think part of it was we have a performance dump. So the feeling that you get out of a yoga pant, you can get in our jeans.
In our jeans, yeah.
But we also just didn't freak out. Like, okay, maybe there are going to be some people that never wear pants with buttons again. But we don't believe that's to be the case.
Yeah, I feel like that's just crazy. I mean, jeans are like the, you know, cornerstone of American apparel, you know? Right. And but that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, and it's cool to hear that you're both, it sounds like when things come up that are tough or maybe shake the foundation a little bit, you're both quick to put yourselves back in a steady footing and kind of move forward with what you have in front of you. So I wanted to ask you, before we go into the questions that I always ask guests at the end of the show, if you could talk a little bit about sort of eco-positive part of the jeans that you have and anything socially responsible that the company kind of sticks to as they're going through the manufacturing process. A lot of people that are listeners of the show are really interested in how to incorporate different aspects of sustainability or ethical fashion into what they're working on and what they're building and how they shop. So can you tell us a little bit about how that plays into Beige Floor?
Yes, I think that the concern is worldwide right now for our environment and for the global aspect of how we live. But I think that it starts with a promise, and then you have to have some kind of belief that the person who's selling you this jean knows where it's coming from. You know, this whole idea of how it was produced. And we stand behind that 100% because we produce all of our jeans in the same factory. I have a relationship with the factory. I'm in the factory. I know who's doing it, who's cutting it, who's, you know, how the washing facility is run, how environmentally correct it's run. But we also are concerned about who's making the fabric, how the fabric's made. So we go to that extent to make sure we understand that part of the picture.
Yeah, I think my dad always said, you know, we loved in my family the medical creed, basically, you know, first do no harm.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're not saving lives here, obviously. Yeah. We're not saving lives one gene at a time. But we definitely don't want to, what we're doing, to harm the environment. And what I love about our Brazilian partners is, it's not just about laws, right? Laws are important. We definitely need environmental laws. But what I love about a lot of the things that make our jeans eco-friendly, like the fact that our denim manufacturer is the largest water recycler in the country of Brazil, they didn't do that because they were regulated to do that. They did that because they believed in it, not only, you know, because they believed also in this first do no harm, but they also, it was also economically,
it made sense to them
from an economic standpoint.
To recycle.
And so this kind of corporate responsibility, it's a real thing. And if you keep saying, if you get so many layers into a production process where you're five companies away from the original product and you have no idea what they're doing, the brand has to be responsible. And I think that's one of the things that we see that's happening is you cannot produce so much so fast and even ensure that it's being done the right way. So even if a brand says, oh, all of our factories are, you know, conscious, it's almost impossible for them to stand up to that. And so I know there are companies out, large corporations out there that are committing to that. And I think it's good. But we do, as an industry, have to take kind of personal responsibility for every part of the process, because there's a lot. I mean, there's over 30 people involved in one pair of Beige Floor jeans. That's just from when we get the fabric. There's other people involved in making of the fabric and growing of the cotton. And so it's a huge chain of events that there's a lot of places where things could be done in a negative way. So I think, Mom, that's, you know, what you're saying is she's there for, you know, I don't think you've ever gone and helped them pick the cotton, no. But you know where
no,
they
are. No, I've been in all the factories that are involved and, you know, and that's something that they're aware of, that that's my concern. And they'll say to me, well, you know, Kathy, this denim is going to be more expensive because it does have this high technology, or it has this recycled denim aspect to it. And I said, I know that, but I know that I'm convinced that the path we want to take. And I think that our consumers, they understand that and they appreciate it.
Well, I think it's wonderful that you're paying attention to such a level. And also, I mean, you're just mentioning, you're not even just having an eye on how the jeans are made, but you're actually thinking about the fabric itself. And I think that's something that often gets overlooked. People will say, well, this was ethically made just because it was sewn in a place that they're aware of, but they're not even kind of going farther back in that supply chain. So thanks for bringing that into the conversation. I do have one kind of superficial question to ask before I get to the final questions. I was reading on your site, you have something in some of the jeans, this chemical that actually helps fight like cellulite. Am I wrong here? Is this what,
yeah.
What is this stuff? Because I had never heard of it and I might be in the market for something like that.
It's Mom discovered it when she was in Brazil. And what one of the cool parts of it was invented by a female Brazilian scientist.
Yeah.
And
A physicist.
And I think originally in her research, she was researching products to help with muscle fatigue and that sort of thing. And in the clinical trials of this product, they realized when the before and after photos of the woman's legs, there was an appearance of less cellulite, and it felt your legs, you know, to the touch felt smoother. So, but the other thing that's very cool about it is that it's hard to explain this until you've worn them, but there's almost sort of a well-being thing happening where you know, I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you've been on your feet on a concrete all day and your legs kind of start to throb.
Yeah.
At the end. These kind of help with that.
And I think what appealed to me about the technology, because it's not some kind of a liquid or cream that's put on it. It actually is microcrystals that are embedded in the yarn. And so it's in bioactive microcrystals. And so this really is smart denim. And it's the beginning of where technology is going to take the whole world of fashion and fabrics, in my opinion. That, you know, just the way smartphones have improved our communication, I think that their fabrics will eventually be able to, like, tell you your blood pressure is high, or you know, there's going to be things that they're going to be testing, that they're going to be able to, it's going to be able to be done through our through the fabric.
Yeah, but for us right now, it is cosmetic. You know, I think that's what's going to be interesting when the technology, health, and fashion merge into one thing, and the government's not going to even know how to handle that.
Well, I'm all for these kinds of smart advances in jeans. I mean, bring it on if they can. They can do things like what you're talking about. We definitely need more of that in the future. So, I've loved talking with you, and I'm excited to hear your answers to the questions I ask everyone at the end of the show. Are there any tech tools, apps, books, resources, or just a great low-tech piece of advice that's helped you kick ass in your day-to-day life that you think would help our listeners kick more ass in their day-to-day lives?
Well, I'm a Googler, so we are a completely Google app-based company, everything Google, which was hard initially for people to get into it, but now we're completely in the cloud, so it makes, you know, telecommuting really great. And then it, for us in the beginning, we were one of the beta testers of the Google app, Google Work. So it was something that was affordable to us. So that's a big thing. And then, as I said, Shopify, it is one of my favorite apps that we use. And a lot of the apps that sit on top of it are great. If you're going to do e-commerce, especially with fashion, it's my number one recommendation.
I would add to that Excel. In fact, I tell every kid going to college, I said, if you do nothing but learn, become an expert in Excel, because you cannot be organized.
You have to have spreadsheets.
You have, yeah. yeah, you have as much as you think it's all about the fashion and design, you have to have some organization.
I respect anybody that can work their way around an Excel spreadsheet. It is quite something when you sit and watch somebody that knows how to manipulate that program in a sort of advanced way. So that's pretty cool. Well, so I haven't met either of you in person, but if I was to meet you and we were to hang out all day, what do you think I would end up absolutely loving about being with the two of you? And what do you think would drive me insane?
Are we supposed to answer for ourselves?
I don't know. I'm going to sort of take the diplomat route here and tell you that you could answer for yourselves or you could answer for each other, however you feel like you want to do it.
Emily, what drives me crazy about Emily is she doesn't clean up her desk. Thank goodness it's not. This is not being recorded as a video.
And what will drive you crazy about Kathy is if you're in the middle of a meeting, she'll leave and won't come back.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But what you'll love about us is we don't take life too seriously. Yeah. I don't think either one of us. We're not, like I said, we're not curing cancer.
Right.
We're just trying to make women feel good and look good.
Right. You have to have fun.
If you had to print a phrase or a motto on a t-shirt and wear it around for the next 7 days, what would it be?
Well, mine would say relationships matter. And because I just recently, I'm reading on whatever, Facebook or something, it came up about this Harvard study that it all comes down to what happiness is all about, your relationships. So I think
I have a list. I'm looking here at my rules, and the rule that everyone likes to see is the last rule of like 100, and it's be nice to mom. So and I think that's kind of, now that I'm a mom, I think everyone should be nice to mom.
Yeah,
I agree with that. And both phrases, there certainly would be phrases I would wear on a t-shirt. So I always close out by asking guests if you have a question you'd like to ask me, anything silly or serious, and I promise to give you an honest answer.
I guess, what is your biggest denim dilemma?
My biggest denim dilemma is...
We think serious question, by the way.
No, I mean, actually, I pretty much live in denim. So it's something that I think about a lot. And, I don't have to tell you that having the great perfect pair of jeans only comes along. I mean, it's not an easy thing to find that perfect pair. I think for me, the biggest problem is that I dislike trying on jeans more than pretty much anything. And I also don't have very much time to shop in stores. So I'm one of these people that has to deal with the buying and the return process. And I don't love that because it's annoying to have to, you get the box and then you're going back to the post office and you're returning it. And so I think when I think about trying on denim and buying denim, for me, it's that sort of acquisition, try on, return process that goes on for several weeks before I actually get the right pair. And so because of that, I typically buy maybe one or two pairs a year, and that's all I wear. Like, I don't have like 10 different pairs. It's really just like one or two.
Well, next time you're in Greenville, you're going to have to come by.
We'll take the challenge. We'll send you a box. It'll be one exchange. So.
Well, I've loved having you both on, and I really appreciate you, your candor and sharing your story. If people want to keep up with you and all the good things you have coming out from Beige Flore this year, what's the best way for them to track you down online and stay in touch with the brand?
I think our Facebook page probably has the most active feed right now, and that's facebook.com/ Beige Flore Jeans, BEIJAFLOR. Yeah, and we didn't even say Beige Flore means hummingbird in Portuguese, so look for the little bird on the little bird on the pants. That's us.
Wonderful. Well, and so listeners know, we will put all of the links to Beige Flore in the show notes for this episode so you can find them. And I hope you both have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much.
Done and done. Okay, guys. So as I said before, the conversation with Kathy and Emily, which, by the way, towards the end of the interview, I love what they were getting at there with how more responsible, ethical, sustainable practices really do need to have an economic incentive. Like, it can't just be because we want to feel good about things. Like, this stuff really works when you've got a business case for it. And so I was excited that they pulled that into the conversation. And I hope it's something that you will keep front of mind as you're building your own businesses. Is how can we make a better business case for the changes that we need to see in the world? All right, with that said, as I promised at the beginning of the show, we are now going to hear from Aaron of a really cool company, Wearwell, that is just coming out with this crowdfunding campaign this week that your founding members of Prestope by Spirit of 628. And I'm really excited to bring you their story in this mini chat with co-founder Erin. Erin, welcome to the Spirit of 608 podcast.
Hi, Lorraine. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming on and also for being one of the founding members of Prestope by Spirit of 608. I have really enjoyed getting to know more about you and your brand in, you know, the couple of weeks that we have been connected through that.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, no, it's been so much fun to be a part of the Prestope community, especially as you're getting it up and running. And I'm equally as excited to be talking with you today. So thanks.
Cool. Well, let's start off. Let everyone know where you are. What city are you in? And tell us also a little bit about what Wearwell is and how it's different from other startups out there.
Yeah, great. So I am based in beautiful Washington, D.C., and my co-founder, her name is Emily Kenny. She is based in Cambodia. So we've got two locations, every time zone covered. But to give you a sense of what we're up to and who Wearwell is, Wearwell makes it effortless for women to find clothes that fit both their style and their values. We do this by curating clothing based on profile information that members of our community provide. So we ask them questions about their style, their sizing, their budget, but then we also dig into what is it that they care about most, you know, their cause preferences, whether that's human rights, the environment, maybe something more specific like girls' education, you name it. We then select three items that we think that woman will love, put them in a box, and send them to her door. She keeps what she loves and she sends back what she doesn't. And when you receive an order from Wearwell, we showcase the impact of the pieces that we included and highlight the amazing brands behind them. You know, our hope is that our customers have a great story to tell at the next event or maybe the next cocktail party they attend and that they know where they can go to find more.
I love this. I mean, you know, it's so hard to shop a cause, so to speak. You know, it's hard to get clothing that really aligns with your values without a ton of research. And it sounds like this is going to be helping women by taking some of that research off of their plates.
That's the goal. Yeah. Emily and I both tried to shop consciously for nearly a year, and we pretty much couldn't find anything that fit what we were looking for unless we spent hours looking for it. So I'm excited about the opportunity here that we have to make it easier for everybody.
Okay. So, you know, startups and fashion startups in particular, they sound glamorous. They sound like a lot of fun. But as we all know, having a business is really tough work. So I'd love to know, what is it for you about your business and what you're doing here that keeps you going even when you experience those really hard moments that every entrepreneur goes through?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for me, Lorraine, it's really about the mission behind what we're doing. I spent about 7 years working in international development, and a lot of the work I was up to exposed me to the role that industries play globally through their corporate social responsibility work or their emerging markets activities. But I was also learning firsthand many of the challenges that women in developing countries encounter in places like Bangladesh, Cambodia, and India. Garment workers, you know, many of whom are women, are often earning low wages. They're exposed to toxic dyes. These issues and many more like them, they're really not new to any of us. But because of the job I was in, I was seeing industries like banking, pharmaceuticals, and even big oil starting to pour resources into these same countries and beginning to actually make a meaningful difference with their corporate citizenship or their responsibility programs. But whenever I looked at what was going on with apparel and fashion, there seemed to be, at least of about a couple years ago, only a little bit to pretty much no activity going on. And what we're trying to do with Wearwell is create a stronger conscious consumer market. You know, if it were easier to find clothes that were consciously made at accessible price points, our gamble is that most people would probably opt to shop that way, call us crazy. And if more people shopped that way, the industry would begin to compete for their business. But for us, it's not really just about cleaning up the industry as much as it is about lifting up the brands that people can feel really good about supporting. So Wearwell's connecting people with emerging brands like Enot, Tonelay, Chartsy, a bunch of others that I am so excited about. So I'd have to say what really keeps me going is the promise that Wearwell can strengthen the conscious fashion ecosystem.
Oh, I love this. I'm really into it. And so you are in a phase of business where it's really important to start laying the groundwork and getting the word out about what you do. Can you tell us what the last thing you did to get the word out was and why you chose that?
Yeah, so the very last thing, if I'm being honest, was I posted on Instagram. But We're speaking on International Women's Day, and it is my favorite day of the year, has been for a long time. And for me, you know, what a better moment to show that fashion isn't just beloved by women around the world, but it's also a global women's issue.
Yeah. And you mentioned Instagram, and you sort of laughed like that was kind of, you know, not some big strategic thing. But I mean, I feel like it's such an important platform for so many people in the fashion space. Do you feel like that's your major or your sort of main social media channel?
It's definitely our main social media channel. I love that Instagram can connect you to not just the products, but to the stories behind them. It's a really amazing storytelling tool. And if we can take that all the way to the makers behind the brands that we'll be carrying, that can be really powerful.
Wonderful. So what's one great tool, tip, or piece of advice that you think other Fest founders need to know about right now?
Yeah. So, Lorraine, I would honestly be lying if I didn't say PressDope. It's been an amazing resource for me, but for the sake of the listeners, I will share another tip. You know, I think every founder goes through this, that it's really easy to get buried in your own work and niche space. For example, you know, I'm working in the conscious fashion space, but if I'm blind to larger fashion industry trends and what big brands are doing, I'm going to be really out of touch. Anybody who's worked with me knows that I'm a huge fan of Fest Company. I read it for all sorts of advice. And Liz Segrin, one of their writers, recently launched a newsletter called Moving the Needle that is a weekly delivery of all of Fest Company's news, insight, their analysis about fashion and retail, and their content is super engaging. It keeps me tied into that bigger perspective despite the little day-to-day challenges and to-dos that tend to churn through my inbox.
Ooh, I'm so glad you mentioned that. And I'm a really big fan of Fast Company. I used to write for them quite regularly. And I have to say, I think they do some of the best, especially digital journalism that there is out there today. They're a really great publication. So I love that you pulled them into the mix and into your recommendations. Tell us, do you have any special news, a promo, or anything else that you'd like Spirit of 6-8 listeners to know about?
I absolutely do. Wearwell is launching through an Indiegogo campaign on March 30th. So if you like what you heard, please visit our site and sign up for updates so that you can spread the word and support us on launch day. But for this audience in particular, if there are founders listening who are interested in accessing the audience we're building by having us carry their products, we would really love to talk about partnering.
Wonderful. So what is the website? And if they do want to reach out to you, what's the best way to do that?
The website is shopwearwell.com. That's shopwearwell.com. And they can reach out to me by email directly at erin@shopwearwell.com.
Wonderful. And I know they can reach out to you through the website and your email, but other ways that you want people to connect with you online, I guess Instagram, that's your top handle. What? How do they find you there?
Yeah, Instagram, our handle is just @shopwearwell.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on today and telling us more about what you're working on. I really can't wait to see what's next.
Thank you, Lorraine. Really appreciate it.
All right. So that was awesome hearing from Erin. Wishing you guys all the best this week as you launch your crowdfunding campaign and bring Wearwell to the world. Everybody listening, thank you for joining me this week for episode 96. I can't believe that we're at 96. It's been really awesome to get here, and I so appreciate your ears on the podcast. If you want to help us out, you know, a quick thing that you can always do is leave us a review, a rating, and subscribe in iTunes or your favorite podcast player, or just tell a friend about us. Word of mouth, man, that's the stuff. And I hope you will join me next time for another conversation with a woman at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. As you know, I call it best, and it's the future.